You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
Gentlemen, that's one of those songs that just always puts me in a good mood, and I hope this show is one that always puts you in a similarly good mood. I am in an extra special good mood tonight, this Saturday evening, May the 23rd. Welcome to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. I'm your host, James Edwards, just in, and I mean just within a couple of hours in, from our annual family vacation. It was our first family vacation in about a year, hence it being annual. But I had the opportunity to take my wife and our children and my parents down to Southwest Florida, and we essentially had our own private beach with there still being some restrictions and people hesitant to travel. Well, it was just wonderful. Wonderful weather, wonderful time of togetherness, which, of course, we have here every Saturday night on the program, but great to spend extended. We were gone about 8 days, and, of course, last week I actually did the show, called in from our vacation rental, called into the studio, did the show. I'm actually back. We cut the trip a day short to get back. Winston Smith was going to be hosting the show tonight in my absence, but we had a little last-minute switcheroo. And so anyway, I'm back and happy to be back, happy to have had that time with my mom and dad and kids and wife. Of course, my wife and I celebrated our 14th anniversary just earlier this month, and as you know, she's expecting our third child, so lots of reasons to take a trip right now, and it was a good one, and I am refreshed and rejuvenated and a nice mental reset, and boy, we are going to pick up where we left off, ladies and gentlemen, here on TPC. I guess we really didn't miss anything. I was here last week and still here now, but the difference was, of course, the week in between, some nice relaxation for the Edwards family. And we're going to welcome back to the show tonight mainstay guests Jared Taylor and Sam Dixon for a comprehensive discussion about the McMichael Arbery case in Georgia. Yes, I know Keith Alexander and yours truly broke it down a couple of weeks ago. We mentioned it in passing with Tim Murdoch last week, but we're really going to do a deep dive into this. The who, what, where, when, and why with Jared Taylor, attorney Sam Dixon, both very close personal friends of mine, will be on to provide the legal take on the matter. That's what we're going to be doing. We will also be talking with Sam Dixon in the third hour about the economic ramifications of the global response to the coronavirus. So, Sam Dixon, this is, in fact, very unusual, but we will have one of our featured guests for 2 hours tonight. Sam Dixon is a guy that can command that kind of time, and Sam Dixon will be with us for the second and the third hours tonight. Jared Taylor coming up after this opening segment to talk about the shooting, the shot heard around the world in Georgia, as we put it. Well, any show when you featured Jared Taylor and Sam Dixon back-to-back is going to be a fantastic show, so I am looking forward to that. We got a new site banner. This is another thing we're really excited about. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. We have updated our banner there at the top of the homepage, also on our Twitter feed at James Edwards TPC. Basically, well, we didn't do too much, but it still looks really good. I think we switched the color, updated the year, and we're ready to go for another few months. The Political Cesspool, of course, is celebrating its 16th year of broadcasting excellence. 2004 to 2020, this October, will be 16 years on the air, and we switched the theme from gold to a nice silver, a gray. Good guys wear gray, you know that, Southerners. And anyway, I think it looks sharp, and it's eye-catching. Let you know we didn't really fall asleep there on the website. The website updates every day with different articles and of course, the weekly show and things like that. But the little eye-catching graphics. I want to thank our web team for putting that together. Well, I mentioned that this was our first family vacation in about a year, but that doesn't mean that we aren't regularly on the road. I certainly am. Doing different appearances and at different functions and speaking engagements and so on and so forth. And we typically piggyback that and make it a family vacation. I know I hosted an event in East Tennessee last fall and took my wife and kids with me. And while I was working, they shot down to Chattanooga and did Rock City and the Incline Railway and some of the great attractions they have in Chattanooga, which is just really one of my favorite places. And, the entire Confederacy, and we do that. If you're going to go on a trip for work, why not take the family and get the most out of it? But this is what we did this week was obviously a little different. What else has been going on, though? Or what else have I been taking a look at here? Yes. Well, one of those trips I mentioned, I had zipped up to Nashville back in January to have a lunchtime meeting with Virginia Abernathy. We were getting some of her books, Population Politics, and she graciously cooked me a nice dinner. That's what we call lunch in the South, and don't forget it. Lunch is dinner, and dinner is supper. So don't get confused. But anyway, she cooked me a nice dinner or lunch, if you prefer. And she sat down and she signed a whole bunch of books that I took back with me home. And we shipped those out to listeners and supporters around the world. Well, anyway, one of the things we talked about at that lunch, we were talking about the absurdity of the whole global warming faux crisis. And she was talking to me about some research she had done and some reading she had done into the cycle of sunspots, and how this was cyclical, and that the sunspots were about to be abating, and we were going to actually be entering into a little bit of a cooling period. And we talked about that. I thought that was fascinating, and she told me some of the findings that she had uncovered. And lo and behold, while I was out of town, I come across an article stating just that. And the headline reads, "The sun has entered a lockdown period. Our sun has gone into lockdown with reduced solar activity as part of a cycle. The sun is currently in a period of solar minimum, meaning activity on its surface has fallen. Experts believe we are about to enter into a sunshine recession with very low sunspots recorded. And the hypothesis is, the belief is, that this will actually drop temperatures for the next few years." So I heard about it first from Virginia Abernathy, and we now pass it on to you. Although I don't necessarily read everything that comes with a scientific tag. My dad was sitting in the front seat. My wife has this tiny little thing, and so we have a three-row vehicle, and she was back in the back with our son, and my dad was up front. And anyway, he came across this article that said there has been discovered a parallel universe in which time runs backwards. So you can't believe everything you read, but we'll go with the Virginia Abernathy story. Anyway, time running backward. That sounds nice as I turn 40 next month. Been doing this since I was 19 years old. People say, well, why haven't you been doing it longer? Well, what was I going to do? I couldn't drive before I started when I was 19, hardly. We'll be right back with Jared Taylor.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, every now and then, ladies and gentlemen, we bring back to the program a mainstay guest who truly needs no introduction. Jared Taylor is certainly one of those guests. And, well, to cut to the chase, I think we all know he is the editor of American Renaissance. I was actually, in preparation for today's discussion with my old friend, going through his bio, and Jared, this can't be right. I mean, surely time hasn't gone by this quickly. I remember White Identity, your book, coming out as if it were yesterday. It reads here on your website that it came out in 2011. Can that be true?
I'm afraid that's true. Those 9 years raced by. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It's about time we wrote another book.
Well, we do have a collection of your essays available at amren.com, if we do nothing. Essays and reviews from 25 years of white advocacy. Hear, hear, Jared.
Dear me. Well, now it's going on to 30. So time does go by, but some of us stick to what we do best or what we think we do best or what we hope will be the most effective.
Or we stick to what we can stick to, and we have certainly stuck to this 30 years, though. I salute you. Yes, even that was 2017. I certainly look at that as if it were yesterday. Even now, that's 3 years. But I remember White Identity getting a copy of it and us talking about it on this program. I thought that couldn't have been more than 4 or 5 years ago on the outside. But in any event, a lifetime of activism, a lifetime of producing fantastic results at amren.com. Jared, it's great to have you back on tonight.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Always great to be with you, James, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, let's get after it. One of the things I said, of course, the dominating news story of this year has been the coronavirus, and really, at least until, I guess, quite recently, there was almost nothing accept this out there. I mean, perhaps you could do a deep dive into some publications and find something else, but pretty much all of the usual suspects, all of the outlets, all of the network television, the websites, the newspapers, it was coronavirus. You know, some element or aspect of the coronavirus was being discussed. There'd be five or six stories a day about it in all publications. And I said, well, that's the one good thing about the coronavirus is that we haven't had to deal with as many absurd headlines accusing whites of racism and oppression and tyranny and all of the things that we would normally see on a much more frequent basis had sort of been pushed down the pecking order. But my goodness, it came back with a vengeance with the case in Georgia, the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery by the McMichaels family, the father and son team there. And I think you wrote the best primer for that that I've yet read. And even that is a couple of weeks old now. But let's just cut to the facts of the matter. Obviously, things have continued to develop since you first posted that article at Amarin.com. But you found out about this, as the rest of us did. Your initial reaction, and how has that evolved since then?
Well, to me, now I don't know, I assume that all of your listeners are generally familiar with the facts of the case, but just go over them very, very briefly. This Ahmaud Arbery was a young black guy who had apparently been caught on video trespassing in a home under construction. He was suspected of perhaps burglaries, but in any case, he was spotted and coming out of a building, actually, and he went off for a run. And the McMichaels, father and son, chased after him in a car, and their idea was to do a citizen's arrest, which is perfectly legal in Georgia. And they tried to block him off, and they failed, and several times they finally got ahead of him, and he jogged up. And they were armed, the McMichaels were armed, and there is a video of it, this crucial, crucial video. And it's clear that Arbery runs around the truck from the other side from where the young McMichael guy is standing with his shotgun, runs around, and he's briefly out of the image, but he runs up to McMichael's, who's got a shotgun, and they're struggling for the shotgun. And that is when the shots are fired. So it's very clear to me, watching that video, that they had no intention of killing this guy. And that is the main thing. That is the profound aspect of this that has been baffling to anybody with any kind of objective view. Here you had two guys who wanted to make a citizen's arrest, and they're clearly shouting at him to stop, stop, we want to talk to you. But instead of stopping and talking, and if two guys are armed and they say they want to talk to me, am I going to run up and tackle them? Am I going to try to attack a guy with a shotgun? If Arbery had not done that, he'd be alive, period, full stop. And yet we get people like Joe Biden, who could be the president of the United States, saying the video is clear. Ahmaud Arbery was killed in cold blood. The video is clear. He was not killed in cold blood. He was killed after a struggle. This, to me, one of the most surprising things about this is, well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, is a sort of a Rashomon effect of this video. You probably are aware that it was a lawyer who was a family friend of one of the McMichaels. He released the video because he thought basically it was going to exonerate the McMichaels, because it was clear that they did not go out and try to shoot this guy. Whereas you've got insane people like LeBron James saying in a reaction after having seen this video, we're literally hunted every day. Every time we set foot outside the comfort of our homes. Can't even go for a damn jog, says he. What a fool. What a fool. But this kind of completely hysterical reaction has been promoted and applauded. And now not only is the two guys who are trying to make the citizen's arrest, who have now been arrested for murder, it's also the guy who drove behind, who made the video. Now, that's the latest thing that happened on Thursday. But I've been going on and on here. To me, but ultimately, as you say, this has managed to push COVID off of the top of the fold, because now we have what may be, in the eyes of the mass media and the eyes of liberals, a certified couple of white racists. And boy, nothing excites them more than the idea, we caught one, and we might be able to string them up. Oh, boy, that just gets their bloodlust up, and that's much more interesting even than the coronavirus.
Jared, that's a fantastic breakdown of the facts of this case. Of course, we did cover it at some length a couple of weeks ago. But again, just to quickly broad brush this thing to add to what Jared just said, and then we'll focus on some of the cultural and ramifications and some of the impacts that the media has had on this case, of course. But let's not forget that the senior McMichael is a retired police officer. Now, these are not, even in the wildest fantasy of LeBron James, this is not the type of guy that would just be out roaming a neighborhood with a gun waiting to hunt a black person, as the basketballer put it. That is just not what retired police officers do. And it also should be mentioned, of course, that this occurrence took place about 3 months ago. And it wasn't until about 2.5 months after the fact that the media sunk its teeth into this and the whole game was changed. Let's not forget, Jared, that this was certainly looked into by the law enforcement authorities in that local area of Georgia when it happened. This wasn't something that was unbeknownst to them. This wasn't some secret shooting that took place that nobody knew about. And not until the video was released did the police begin to look into it. They had looked into it extensively on more than one occasion. I think at least two district attorneys said this to me looks like self-defense. And no charges were brought. So let's pick up right there, my friend, as we continue to examine and explore this topic for the remainder of the hour. We'll pick up right there with the great Jared Taylor, Amran.com. He's with us, and we'll be right back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state will get back up and running soon, but it will be in a methodical way.
We've been talking about reopening and how we proceed with reopening. It's been different in different regions all across the state. We have criteria all across the state that applies to every region. There is no variance in the criteria region from region. There is no political difference. There is no local differences.
He has also announced that people can gather in groups of 10. The mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, says restaurants can offer curbside service.
We know that this relies on our individual actions to keep our distance from people, to wear a face covering, to wash our hands.
This is USA Radio News.
Balance of Nature's fruit and veggie capsules contain 100% vine-ripened fruits and vegetables, tested pure with no pesticides, fillers, or additives of any kind, and are the most effective whole food supplements on the market today. Fruits and vegetables are on an average 85% water. Balance of Nature uses cold vacuum technology to remove the water, leaving only the whole food. Our cold vacuum technology maintains 99% of the fresh fruits and vegetables' original nutritional value. Don't wait to see what getting over 10 servings of whole fruits and vegetables every day can do for you. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Start your journey to better health today by calling 1-800-246-8751. Or by going to balanceofnature.com. Again, that's balanceofnature.com. And make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code USA.
New York has reported their daily coronavirus deaths. It's now down to 84 after many weeks of being in the hundreds. Governor Andrew Cuomo says it's a critical benchmark. WCBS reporter Christy Kalishin says many parts of the state are waiting for the all clear to start reopening.
How soon the Mid-Hudson region of New York will open depends on the number of trained contact tracers.
And I said, look, we have a choice. If we can get them trained over Memorial Day weekend, we can reopen on Tuesday.
All that's left is another 857 more contact tracers to be trained in the region. More than 2,200 have already been identified overall, with a majority already trained. For Long Island, contact tracing is slated to be online by this Wednesday.
We could open by Wednesday if the number of deaths continues to decline and we get that tracing up. So that is also very good news.
The state's beaches will remain open throughout Memorial Day weekend, with the governor saying that so far, beachgoers have been compliant.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, everybody. James Edwards and Jared Taylor breaking down the latest news in the McMichaels Arbery shooting in Georgia. And I want to pick up exactly where we left off, but first, just a quick digression back to LeBron James. I read that, Jared, as you did, and it just that level of ignorance really offends me. It you know, that's the kind of statement you would expect somebody like LeBron to have said might have been occurring back in the 60s, even though that it would have been obviously very exaggerated even for that time period. You know, the only thing remarkable about the violence that took place in the 60s to me was how remarkably muted it was when considering the enormous and immediate impact being forced upon the South, the immediate change being forced upon the South. Of course, we know some of the tragedies that occurred, and boy, can't we all recite them. You know, another thing I said was, I believe it was actually Steve Saylor who first said, when you need up-to-the-minute reporting on the breaking news of the Emmett Till case, the New York Times was your go-to source. And, you know, still to this day, you read things about Emmett Till in the New York Times until COVID came along and brushed that off the scene. But anyway, so obviously that sort of thing is not going on, but that is the narrative. They might not take it quite as far as LeBron James, but they're not too far behind. And well, we were talking just before the break. Yeah, go ahead, Jared, please.
But James, it's all very well to say LeBron James is an idiot, but look at Joe Biden. Joe Biden says that Arbery was
the same thing
before our very eyes. Joe Biden is just as idiotic as LeBron James. This is particularly shameful, I think. I mean, I don't expect professional basketball players really to say make much sense about anything besides basketball. But good grief, for Biden to speak that way. And you know, we were talking about the time frame of this thing, and the shooting took place on February 23rd. And then the video was leaked to the public on May 5th. That was really quite some time later. But as you point out, and very, very importantly so, this wasn't some secret video. The police had seen it. The police had looked all through it. They had done an autopsy on Arbery. They had examined his wounds. They had spoken to the people who were involved. And one of the prosecutors who recused himself, George Barnhill, I'm sure you've already spoken about him on your program, and I'm sure you've read his open letter describing how he thought the case should be handled. It's a very, very interesting document. Barnhill describes his experience, the number of murders, shootings, violence of all kind that he's prosecuted, and then he goes on to say, look, these two guys were making a citizen's arrest, which is perfectly legal. And they asked this guy to stop. This guy did not stop. He came around, and he attacked a guy with a shotgun. And his very first wound, and I think this is very significant, is in the palm of his hand. That's exactly where he would expect it to be. It's his right hand. He's a right-handed guy. He's reaching for a guy's shotgun. He's got his hand on the muzzle. Then Barnhill goes on to say, it's clear that it was McMichael's finger on the trigger, but it's entirely possible that in trying to pull the
yes.
shotgun out of his hand, Arbery could have made the gun go off himself. It's really not even clear who actually pulled the trigger or actually forced the trigger to be pulled. And so he says, look, they were doing something legal. They were armed legally.
and they were trying to make a citizen's arrest. This guy runs around the truck, tries to wrestle a gun out of his hand. What's this guy going to do with his shotgun if he manages to get it out of Travis McMichael's hands? I don't think he's just going to throw it away. I think he's going to turn it on McMichael. So he says McMichael has got every reason to think his life is in danger and to shoot him. Case closed. But then he also went on to say, this is not the end of the disposition of the case. We plan to bring it to a grand jury to decide whether or not charges should be filed. Now, that sounds eminently and supremely reasonable to me. Where are the holes in his argument? Tell me.
Well, there are no holes, of course, but now that the media has completely turned this thing upside down, imagine being the pressure that being placed on a grand juror. And then, of course, when it goes to trial, a juror themselves. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But you mentioned, or I believe it was Joe Biden. Well, any number of prominent Democrats and Republicans, by the way, referring to this as a modern-day lynching, the media spokesman for the Southern Baptist Convention saying that this was some of the terrorism you saw in the Jim Crow era. I mean, all across the board. Jared, the whole idea about a black man, a white man, any man being innocent until proven guilty, not so much, I guess, for the McMichaels, certainly, and perhaps not so much for whites anymore, if it is a racially antagonized incident.
That's right.
But Arbery was not running away from them. He was running towards them. He grabbed the gun. It looked as if, with his other hand, he was swinging at the younger McMichael. The shooting took place. You put this in your article, and I thought this was a great line. It is amazing. I don't have it right in front of me, so I'll paraphrase, but you wrote to the effect that it is amazing or astonishing how people can watch the exact same video and come to such wildly different conclusions.
That's right. That's right. And Joe Biden and LeBron James made their idiotic remarks after having watched the same video you and I looked at.
And the law enforcement. Again, this can't be overstated. And the law enforcement there in Georgia when the event actually took place and not 2.5 months later.
Yes, yes. Now, it goes to show you just how much public pressure can make law enforcement change its mind and turn on a dime. And now, as I said at the beginning of this program, the guy who took the video, he has been arrested for murder.
Yes, yes.
This is just extraordinary. It is true that he used his car to try to block off Arbery and try to get him to stop. But he was not armed. He was not part of the group that was there. And to accuse him of murder is absolutely extraordinary. But he's in the pokey now, charged with murder. The other thing about this is that it's just so astonishing. The senior McMichaels actually called 911. Before they went off chasing this guy. You don't call 911 when you're about to go kill somebody in cold blood, as Joe Biden says. And the other thing is, if they wanted to shoot him, they had many opportunities to shoot him. They had blocked him off. He ran the other way. They kept going after them, kept going after him. If they'd wanted to kill him, it would have been easy. But no, they just wanted to talk to him. Now, you can argue as to whether or not it was wise for them to get armed up and go after this guy and try to make a citizen's arrest. But so far as I can tell, this was entirely legal on their part. And what then happened is a very unfortunate thing, but it's because this young black guy charged and tried to wrestle a gun away from an armed man. That is just one of the stupidest things you can do. And it reminds me so much of Michael Brown with Darren Wilson, the police officer. And once again, you have a guy, a black guy who is assaulting a white man, a white officer in this case, gets shot and becomes a hero. And now Ahmaud Arbery is a hero for exactly the same reason.
I was actually going to ask you in the next segment, and I do think we'll save it for that because we only have a minute or two left, but I was going to ask you where you believe that this incident ranks in the tradition of Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown. And we'll compare it directly to Michael Brown in just a moment. But there is some truth in the fact that there has been a lynch mob at play here, but it is in fact the media lynch mob, and not the lynch mob that they pretend. And I wonder sometimes with people like Biden, how much of this is just a big pretend. I don't think anybody with a room temperature IQ can really believe that the law enforcement in this Georgia town is colluding with white vigilantes to hunt and cover up the murder of black joggers, which, by the way, let's not forget, he was jogging. This avid jogger was in khaki shorts and boots, basically, and which no jogger would go out in. And of course, in the tradition of some of these other shootings, why did they choose to use his high school yearbook picture instead of the mugshot he had, which was several years more recent?
Oh, well, that's, you know the reason for that. We all know the reason for that. That's the Trayvon Martin technique that they have perfected over the years. Yes, indeed. No, there are many, many quite disgusting things about this. And if you really sat Joe Biden down and you said, these are the circumstances, this is what happened, let's watch that video again, and you said to him, now, Uncle Joe, do you really want to call this a cold-blooded lynching? I think he'd have a hard time saying no.
Well, this gets to the whole point I wanted to bring you on, I guess. It's important to restate the facts, as you've so eloquently done, but this is a very dangerous, not a precedent, because the precedent has already been set, of course, but this continues along with a very dangerous trend of political correctness, the tenets of political correctness alone, leading to the arrest and the ruination of people's lives. We'll be right back.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine. The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education, conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voter fraud.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Welcome back to get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, everybody was right. There has been a lynching in play here. It was the media lynching of these two men, the McMichaels, even after this case had already been thoroughly looked into. And I'm going to be talking with Sam Dixon in the next hour about some of the legal ramifications of this, what it portends going forward. But, you know, suffice it to say, and there's no doubt about it, these men would not have been arrested when they were had it not been for the media outcry. Now, that is, to me, much more of a lynching than what we saw on that video. And we know it's a fact because, again, this had been looked into and the media picks up on it in May and they're arrested within, you know, a few hours, you know, 72 hours, something like that, you know, within a week anyway. Yes.
Two days later.
2 days. There you go.
Yes. No, it's extraordinary. And, of course, it has been a little odd the way this succession of prosecutors, but as it turned out, the first two prosecutors had some kind of connection with the McMichaels because, as you pointed out, he was a retired law enforcement guy, and they had worked with him on cases, and so they successively handed the case off. But now the person who is in charge is a black woman, the first black DA of Cobb County, and so she is going to be making quite a splash, I'm sure. The reasoning was that this had become such a huge case that they had to hand it off to an outfit that had more resources than the county prosecutors at the time. But my suspicion is that it was very important for public relations purposes to have a black woman in charge of this prosecution. I believe.
Can you imagine? Oh, just a quick interjection. Can you imagine the name that I suspect she would love to make for herself now that all of these lions from the civil rights era are in winter? Boy, they need a new icon, and this is a perfect case for somebody to really raise a profile. Not that surely she would allow anything other than the rule of law to guide her in her prosecution.
Oh, I don't doubt that. But to me, I do have a fantasy. And you said you were talking about maybe some of these other cases. My fantasy is this, that when this goes to trial, which it will, that it ends up exactly like the Trayvon Martin case. The facts are presented, and the jurors, despite the tremendous pressure to convict, are convinced by the facts, and they vote to acquit.
Okay, so that's the thing. I mean, No, it's not impossible. Look, I mean, the facts are clearly on the side. To me, in my opinion, I mean, I'm a layman here, but I can see a video as well as LeBron James or Joe Biden can, and yeah, I can say after having seen that what I see, and that's all a juror is going to be asked to do. I think the facts, what we've read, what has been released from some of these other people in the law enforcement there prior to the media getting hold of this, I think the facts are certainly overwhelmingly in favor for the exoneration of the McMichaels. However, at one point you're going to roll the dice and come up snake eyes in a case like this. I was pleasantly surprised that George Zimmerman and Darren Wilson and Ferguson in the Michael Brown shooting were exonerated, even though I thought that those were both clear-cut cases of self-defense as well, especially the Darren Wilson case. I mean, my goodness, an active duty police officer walking the beat and he's being attacked by Michael Brown. I mean, if that wasn't a justifiable shooting, such thing doesn't exist. So I think the facts are on the side of the McMichaels too, but you know, even the Ferguson situation was now a few years back, and political correctness has deteriorated our culture and permeated the minds of potential jurors even more so now than even back just a few short years ago in Ferguson.
Well, but
I guess it all comes down to who gets picked.
It comes down to who gets picked. Jury selection is going to be an absolutely extraordinary undertaking. And this is going to have all of the world's eye. This is going to be under a microscope every step of the way, absolutely every step of the way. And, you know, it is true that political correctness and this anti-white crusade that is on has reached fever pitch, but at the same time, I see evidence that more and more people are seeing through it. More and more people are fed up with it. More and more white people said, wait a minute, we are not the cancer of human history. Get off of this. Get off our backs. And so it might be that there'll be a juror who walk into there with a very sensible attitude about what goes on and has seen all the bias that goes into it. That's entirely possible. And I believe in Georgia it still takes a unanimous jury to convict. But probably.
Oh, now that's interesting. That's interesting.
Your next guest will know more about that than I do.
Well, I'll be sure to ask him, because that is a very interesting thing. If it's just majority, I think you think in a case like this, it would take a unanimous. Yes, it would be hung even if it was 11-1.
Yes.
Is at least my understanding. But we'll find out for sure. But here's another thing. I mean, I don't know. I was talking to Sam about this last week. Maybe it was a week and a half ago. And if they have retained legal counsel, Sam doesn't know who it is. And that's another thing. You know, in a lot of these high-profile cases, I was watching a documentary on the Casey Anthony murder. We remember that. That was one of these, you know, highly publicized trials. Well, you know, she gets this shark lawyer just for the glamour, and he ends up getting her off. And what was really a slam dunk case against her. Now, that's comparing apples and oranges to this case, but I don't see a high-profile lawyer really swooping in to take this one. Do you, Jared?
Well, James, I, in fact, spoke to Sam a week or so ago when the names of the McMichaels lawyers were announced. And he said to me...
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, so this must have happened just after I talked. Well, what do you know? You'll inform me along with the rest of the audience.
He said that their name... These are high-profile guys. These
Good.
Are folks who will probably go to bat for the McMichaels in a very substantial way. And don't forget, even George Zimmerman, he got quite competent counsel. And so in a negative sort of way, just like for this black lady, Ms. Holmes... This is going to be a starring role for some guy, certainly if he can get them off. Get an acquittal for the McMichaels. Wow, that's going to be a feather in somebody's cap. And at the same time, even if he fails, it's going to be a spectacular advertisement for his services, especially if, I think there are at least two of them, especially if they turn out to be eloquent counsel. So we'll see. I was very relieved when Sam informed me that no, these guys are not these,
that's interesting.
Public defenders, that they're hotshots.
Well, thank you for telling me that. I was in fact going to ask, that was one of my questions on my notes for Sam, was to get an update on that. But you must have talked to him literally, it couldn't have been more than a day or two after I did. And at that point, it was still unclear. But okay, so that's good news. But let me ask you this in closing. What do you think, and I'll ask Sam the same question, this will be one question both of you get, what do you think this portends for the future of American jurisprudence? I mean, I hope that they are acquitted based upon what I've seen. Now, if there's something out there that we don't know and we haven't seen, where this was just a flat-out murder, then obviously we condemn that. And would want justice to be served accordingly. But that's not what I see, so I hope, based upon what I know to this point, that they are acquitted. But just the fact that they were arrested only after the media demanded it.
That's
moving
right.
Forward, as we continue to become more of a minority, and as white solidarity and white identity continue to take a beating, at least for the short term, obviously, I think, in the long run, we're going to be okay. I really do believe that. I'm not saying that. I'm not the guy in Iraq who was talking about how the Iraqis were winning the war as the American tanks rolled past him in the background of the shot. But no, I think ultimately our people are going to turn this thing around. That doesn't mean it's going to happen before the end of this trial or even in the next few years. Going forward, Jared, the future of American jurisprudence in the short term, what are we looking at?
Well, I agree with you. This was a terrible, terrible precedent. The facts have not changed. No facts have come to light. There have been no new developments as far as any investigation is concerned. What has happened is, as a result of intense media scrutiny, as a result of idiotic statements by Joe Biden and LeBron James and everybody else and his brother, the law enforcement operators in the United States has turned on a dime, and instead of going through the usual process of going to a grand jury, taking your time, now they are in the dock, in prison, without bond, for heaven's sake. At least they're going to get a bond hearing. But, no, as you point out, the fact that media, intense media scrutiny, can sway the scales of justice in such an obvious way portends very, very dark future for us.
Well, I don't want to steal all of Sam's thunder, but I know one of the things he's going to tell us in the next hour is that the Republican leadership apparatus in the state of Georgia has been just about as despicable as Biden and the Democrats et al. Brian Kemp, the governor, the Republican senators of the state of Georgia, if they're not just quietly going along with it, they are, in fact, saying some of the things that we've come to loathe this hour.
Well,
but look, I hope they get off. Their lives are forever changed no matter what, and not for the better.
Not for the better, that's for sure. Yes, indeed. No, even, well, I suppose even Republicans. Why do I even say even Republicans or even conservatives? But conservatives, Republicans, every last one of them wants to be at the head of the lynch mob if they've got what they think is a certified racist in their sights. It's contemptible. It's despicable. In fact, I can hardly think of anyone in a public position on any publication, any political party, who has said, well, hold on. Read what George Barnhill said about this thing. Read about this analysis. Read about the autopsy report. This is not an open and shut lynch case at all. In fact, from what you and I can tell, it's a pretty open and shut case of self-defense.
Well, from what we can tell, now if only we were judges. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Amrin.com, there you can continue to follow the work of Jared Taylor and his incredible publication and organization, American Renaissance, Amrin.com. Get some of his books, support his work. Jared, we love you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
Will do, my friend. Sam Dixon up next.